introduction. And since this is the last one, I'm try to make it as short as possible, then we all can go for dinner. So what I will talk is something about very related to Archil's talk, but in a different perspective, mostly from a combinatorial differential geometry view. So let's see what kind of difference between this under this same subject but different techniques. So first I will talk about some motivations. This work mostly motivated by application. So we are trying to think about the social choice examples with modern internet development. And also we talk about revisit the classical social choice theory to see what we can do and what we cannot, and what's possible among impossibility. And then I will introduce the combinatorial Hodge theory and preference aggregation. And basically we present Hodge rank on graphs, general graphs, and then some combinatorial differential geometry, a theorem of Hodge decomposition, a simplicial complex can be applied in our case, and then some discussion. So the social choice theory, so fortunately I don't need to talk about too much, you already know from Archil's talk. And so the basic question we in social choice is how to aggregate preference among lots of voters which faithfully represent individuals. So what we mean by faithfully, that's a very big question. And another thing, so under the definition, then how we can do this. So this topics at least start from Border in 1770s when he first proposed some border count against the plurality vote in French Academy of Science. And that starts the topic, but very soon, Condorcet gives another argument about the border count. He showed the border count cannot give rise to the correct Condorcet winner. So you already see Condorcet winner, although sometimes does not exist, but if it exists, it may not be always the same as border count. So from then on, a lot of argument what kind of social aggregation rule could be the best or could be the good one. So, but in Arrow's famous thesis, he proposed impossibility theorem. Basically, we are very pessimistic about this general question. We don't have any answer and a very general fair settings. And after that, various work still try to solve the conflicts within restricted settings. So some work made most famous by Amartya Sen and Kamini from optimization view, and Don Sari, I will particularly put his name here because later I will somehow follow his kind of geometric perspective. But all those classical theory, so now we have to face some new examples with the development of internet. So maybe everyone has experience by purchasing books from Amazon or watch movies, borrowing movies from Netflix. They have recommendation system, so that's a kind of a modern social choice example. And also we have peer review system like CiteSeer, and most famously is the Google's web page citation system with PageRank, and also eBay. So many participants in eBay will rank each other about their credit. So those examples are our modern social choice examples we keep in mind. But with those new examples, we have new features, a departure from classical ones. So one example like this Netflix movie rating example. So maybe you already have know the data released by Netflix company. That's a very large matrix with 480,000 rows and users and 17,000 movies. So each user read part of the movies by five stars like this, and but most of the matrix elements are missing values. We don't have most of them, 99%, and we want some either preference aggregation over all the users. That means can we predict movie by certain by this large population, or we have personalized the rating, means we want use a user group with similar interest and give a preference aggregation within such groups. So these two questions, of course, the second one is the Netflix grand prize problem, but these problems are basic preference aggregation. And second example, maybe you already watched this movie very recently. Lots of movie showed on the flight across the continents, and this movie is The Social Network. There is a virtual scene. This is the founder of Facebook company, Zuckerberg, and when he got a broken relationship with his girlfriend, he feel very hungry and go back to the dorm and steal all the face pictures from other dorms in Harvard University and put those face on pairwisely on the website and ask a reader which face is hotter. So this is actually not true in reality. He never did this kind of thing. But the true thing is a face match is really the precursor of Facebook, the early version of Facebook. But in reality, actually, we are worried about other things, not face, but like video clips, like YouTube have a large collection of videos, and whether some complicated combination of compression technique can give you a good, a faithful quality for the original reference. So this kind of thing, recently people use crowdsourcing over internet and with pairwise comparisons. That's another ranking problem we are facing now. The last one is very, maybe everyone you know, that's the PageRank web citation system. So that's some cartoon for that. I will skip this. Suppose everyone use Google. And but in these examples, the new features are we have distributive data over internet. And the very common settings that we have incomplete data with large amount of missing values. And also we have imbalanced setting, means different voters contribute different amount of voting. So how to incorporate these elements, new features into the classical social choice tools? That's one problem we are trying to look at that. So actually how to face these challenges? There's no universal rule to deal with all those kind of data. So here I just propose one principle based on combinatorial Hodge theory. Later you will see what's that. And actually just require linear algebra knowledge if you just want to use that. And but this principle somehow is useful. I don't mean it's best because we all know all models are wrong, but some are useful. So this just a little bit useful. And so here we come back to classical social choice that give us some picture what where what direction we should pursue with this new kind of feature. So here is the classical social choice. The basic problem, look at the total order of permutation on a common set of elements V. So pay attention that total order, but the new data may come from partial order and something like that. But the social choice theory asks, can you find a social aggregation mapping from this set of permutation to a single permutation or total order on V, which best represent voters' will? What mean best represent? Just now, Achille lists all the fire conditions, which looks natural, you have to consider. But under those natural conditions, there's no social aggregation mapping, basically. So this is a very sad news, but we still do something. What we did in practice, there are two important class of rules in practice. So first class of rules called the position rules means given any permutation, we assign some score such that with the decreasing of the position or the ranking, and the score go decreasingly. So then we find the social order by simply take the sum of all score over raters, total score over raters, and use this total score to sort the items. This is called position rules. Different choice, very famous one is the border count. That's the first social choice rule, perhaps in history. You just take this simple one. The first the top one will be given an n minus 1 score, and the top two will be given n minus 2, and so on. The last one will receive a 0 score, and then you just use this score to average to aggregate the social order. And another is a plurality counting, is called vote. For example, if you vote for top one, you just take this score, leave top one to be one, or all others to be zero. It does not count. And for top two, you do not distinguish whether the item the candidate was in the first place or the second place. You just give an equal score and leave all the others equal to zero. And similarly, you can define other vote. And a very modern example is like this mean opinion score, widely used in internet on rating books and movies and videos. So basically we have a 5-star system that's mostly used. The system represents the quality or the impairment of the video and so on. The trouble is if you look at those scores, very difficult to decide given an atom whether it belongs to 3 or 2 and something, especially in this video impairment system, whether slightly annoying and annoying, whether this kind of quality makes sense to you, it's very difficult. So in those modern application, so defining score is used will incur lots of ambiguity, and also very difficult to verify whether participant gives false ratings intentionally or carelessly. So another popular choice to overcome this problem in practice, we use a second kind of rule called the pairwise rules. In other words, we convert all the profile, actually profile means just a distribution function or frequency function on n factorial permutation group on this set, into pairwise comparison matrix. That's a n by n matrix, and essentially just n choose 2 distinct elements. So this xij is the number of permutations such that I larger than j in the voting set. So if we always define the social order based on this data, we forget about the original data. So among this set of rules, the most famous one is Kamini optimization. Means we want to find a social order which try to minimize the pairwise mismatch to this data set X. So, but this question is NP-hard to solve. And another in pairwise comparison is a plurality rule. Means we simply count in pair the comparison how many number wins, like tournament, we take these rules. And very interesting, incomplete round-robin tournament means every two player, every two candidates will receive comparisons. So this plurality rule equivalent to border count, actually. So these two, the second scheme also used widely in the applications, like a peer review system. All peer review systems use pairwise comparisons. And the good news is that with pairwise comparison, we just reduce the rating, maybe ambiguous rating, into a binary choice model. So that's easier. So that's why this is popular. But the bad news is pairwise comparison in the larger set need n choose 2 comparisons between atoms. Sometimes that's much higher than a linear score based on n atoms. So that's the application issue when n is large we have to face. So what's the difference between these two? Actually, here is I use Don Sari's perspective. The profile means the distribution function or frequency and function on symmetric group can be decomposed into those four components. So these components, some orthogonal to one to each other. The first one is called a universal kernel. That means all ranking method, no matter its position rules and pairwise mass rules, always induce a complete tie on any subset of V. So I did not write down this one because very complicated to write down, but I just mentioned the dimension of this one equals to this line. And actually with N goes to larger and larger, the the ratio between this dimension and the whole permutation group, N factorial, that goes to 1. In other words, when N is large, most of the data, the profile data, will contribute nothing to your ranking method. It just vanishes on the universal kernel. So very small distinction will happen on the remainder profile, but that will give you a lot of difference of the ranking result. The first profile will be called a Bowder profile. So this profile, the construction is given a ranking list like this one, and if you just put, if for any atom, you just put 1 if this atom runs on the top, and negative 1 if this atom on the bottom, and add them together. The total sum of this will give a basis. So we have N minus 1 such basis. This basis will be called the Bowder profile. Actually, all ranking methods will give the same result on this profile, means on this subspace. And another one is a Condorcet profile. So this profile, actually, you given a permutation element sigma, you use a rotation of this sigma, means the Zn orbit of this sigma, and with equal weight, say each one contributes 1 volt, but then you reverse all the Zn orbit of the sigma, and use a minus volt on this one. This gives another basis. This basis actually the dimension is above, and called the Condorcet profile. The interesting point is all position rules give the same result on this Condorcet profile. And only pairwise method differ in this Condorcet profile. And the last one actually is called the departure profile. It also do not have a closed form to write down, but the good thing is all pairwise rules give the same result on this departure profile. So with this decomposition, actually we can look at different method and give a classification. Bowder count among all these method above is the most consistent ranking method, in the sense that for full set ranking, means given V, given N item, it only depends on Bowder profile, does not depend on any other profile. This profile is only N minus 1 dimension over the N factorial dimensional space. But for subset ranking, means if you remove any candidate, for example, if you have three candidates for voting for the president, but in the middle one drops, so then you are remained with two candidates, but you don't want to create a new census, you just use the original three candidate voting data. And but subset, this kind we call the subset ranking. Subset ranking Bowder count will depend on both Bowder profile and Condorcet profile. And also pairwise ranking rules both depend on Bowder and Condorcet profile. But the last one is the position rules depend on both Bowder and departure profile. So in this setting, we can say the best choice for social choice aggregation probably is the Bowder count, because that's the best possible, that method agrees with most of other aggregation rules in this sense. So maybe too fast, but let's say that's some possibility from impossibility. If you all agree, we can do something else, but of course, this might not be the only reason you choose a social choice rule. But with this kind of a basic setting. Can we generalize the border count of the picture about to modern setting with data distributive and on networks and incomplete and imbalanced, and even with dynamic and random settings? So here we say how the decomposition on graphs exactly give you the tool with generalized border count to to those data on graphs. So what that means, so let's take a very simple case. Assume you have a set of candidates to rank V1 to V5, and each voter just give you a partial ranking on this set of candidates. So say the blue voter, actually he put some arrow V1 to V2, means he prefer V1 over V2, and so on, a partial set of arrows, and the red one give another set, maybe on the same candidates, maybe on different candidates, and the green set, and so on. You imagine you have a large collection of such data. But those data will be distributed on a graph. So we have vertex set and the edge set. Edge set consists of those pairs which are comparable or receive data like this. So our purpose is to minimize this very simple least square problem. We are looking some score for this candidates such that the score difference try to mimic the pairwise comparison data on the graph. And of course, we could put some confidence weight or indicator function. And this pairwise comparison data means for Ritter alpha, if he prefer I to J, then we can put one here and otherwise negative one. Of course, you can put some levels or score difference, different levels than one, maybe one, two, and so on, to give a different amount of between the difference of the two atoms. But if you rewrite the data, rewrite the problem into another one by squeezing the Ritter, and you can get this weighted least square problem. So all the data will be compressed into a skew symmetry matrix defined on this graph. So this yij is the weighted average of what the data. But that satisfies yij equals to negative yji. So this is basically a skew symmetric matrix, and our score try to make their difference as close as to this skew symmetric matrix as possible in the least square sense. And actually, this one induces a natural inner product on the graph edge. Means any two function, any two skew symmetric matrix U and V defined on this graph, that can be defined if this inner product. Here, for comparison, we can write a Kamini optimization, which minimizes the number of pairwise mismatch. In this way, we put a sign on the score difference, and then this minimization problem actually is NP-hard, just replacing this score difference by the sign of their difference, because this problem is equivalent to minimum feedback arc set. So a very simple geometric explanation for three candidates will be like this. If, assume you just have a IJK, three candidates, and the shaded region, shaded plane on this picture actually represent the subspace satisfy this condition. So it means xij plus xjk plus xki equal to zero. So that's we call the transitivity plane. And all the other, we imagine, assume your data is normalized within negative one, positive one, ij just represent how much vote you have such that xi is preferred to j. If that's positive, then you mean I prefer to j. Otherwise, negative, you prefer j. And this cube actually consists of 8 orthons and 8 small cubes. That represent all the possibility of your voting data, our pairwise data in this sense. So this particular one, this 111, this orthon, the first orthon represent the data. You have a very cyclic ranking. I is preferred to J, J preferred to K, and K is preferred to I and vice versa, the another diagonal opposite the ascent represent the reverse direction cycle. So we in this among these eight ascent, eight cubes, there are six cubes of them. Remove these two. Those are those are the transitive region. Means that when data lies in this region, basically you have a combinatorial transitive case. Means you do not have cycle happened in the pairwise comparison data. But this particular plane in the middle of this six region will be represented by this algebraic condition. And actually, Kamini optimization just search for any data in this large cube. It's L1 projection to this transitive region consisting of six cubes. And the border count, the optimization problem we discussed just now, actually mean for any data point, you just try to find L2 projection to this shaded plane. So that's the key difference. So if n is very large, the transitive region actually becomes very small because that consists of n factorial cubes, but the number of total number of cubes will be 2 to n choose 2. So exponentially larger than this n factorial. So that's why Kamini optimization is NP hard in the large setting when n is large. But still, L1 projection on this shaded region will be easy to deal with because we just have the square problem. So here's some motivation why we start, we use this kind of model, this kind of least square problem, because there is a large family of models called linear model in statistics. They just say if you observe a probability that I is preferred to J, then you just assume this probability depends on some score or some merit, true merit for the candidate whose difference gave rise to the probability. So like this case, for some phi is a skew, is some symmetric cumulative distribution function. Of course, you can revert this process and get some noise observation. So very famous one is the least square problem we discussed just now actually comes from this uniform model, means phi is a linear function. And we also have some Bradley-Terry model with this very special log odds ratio function, and the Thurston-Mostella model coming from psychology, and the angular transform model, this created by Mostella mainly for some variance stabilization purpose. So all this kind of model. So no matter which model you have, you always have this skew symmetric matrix by hat summarize your pairwise data. So the all Hodge decomposition just give rise to you this result on graph, means that this Y hat will be decomposed into three orthogonal component. Remember, we have inner product on this space. So with these three component adapted to the graph, the first component actually is the score difference for some score. So this is essentially give rise to the rating of your atoms. And then the second component satisfy these two conditions. For every triangle, means ij and jk and ki both exist in this graph, and as the edge in this graph, then total triangular trace will equals to zero. And also for each node, the weighted sum equals to zero. So the first condition we call the triangular curl free, and the second condition we can call it divergence free if you would like to borrow some terms from calculus. And the third component will be the orthogonal complement. So actually we call the second component as the harmonic ranking, and the third component as the curl component. So here is an example what the harmonic ranking looks like. Assume if you have this graph like with a six node and two triangles. On each triangle ABC, you have a total triangular curl equal to zero, and this EF also the same case, but for each node you have inflow equals to outflow, so you can verify each every node, but of course here I have a typo, it should be 3 and 3 here. But anyway, after modifying this with this typo, then you have this harmonic ranking curl flow and divergence, curl free and divergence free. And another one is this example is a curl. It's a curl component, means A larger than B, B larger than C, C larger than A in the same amount. So that kind of two typical example. So from this Hodge conversation, we could solve the first component and give rise to the square function S hat just by solving this normal equation. This equation is exactly the graph Laplacian equation. So here is a graph Laplacian defined on this graph G with weight. So can be defined this way. We note this is an unnormalized graph Laplacian. And the very important thing is for complete and balanced graph, this S hat exactly gives the border count score. So that's why how we say this this one generalized border count from complete and balanced data setting. And of course, this definition includes some operator. Later, I will explain what those operator means. That's comes from the algebraic topology or some name on that. But we don't need to pay attention at this moment. We just pay attention that how to solve this equation in a fast way. Actually, very recently, Daniel Spielman and Teng gave, and also Gary Miller group gave some provable almost linear algorithm with suitable preconditioners on solving this equation. But of course, there are some argument on whether their approach is implementable or in practice how to do it. So far, no one really implement this one with node more than 10 node. So still very in dangerous state whether we have a really good algorithm for solving that equation. But the residual Y2 and Y3, that will account for inconsistencies. Means we look at all the colleagues in this graph. So we define a three-clique complex, means we collect all the three-clique, means IJK, complete subgraph in this one, and expand the graph into three-element set, we call the clique complex. And on each triangle, Y3 actually does not satisfy this triangular trace equal to zero. That will be non-zero. So we say Y3 actually counts the local inconsistency or called triangular curves. But Y2 satisfy this triangular trace and also the another the curl-free and the divergence-free condition. So Y2 actually give rise the harmonic ranking give rise to a circular coordinate on V. So remember, that means all the set of V involved, all the candidates involved, you always have a big cycle passing through all the elements. So give rise to a circular coordinate. So this will cause the fixed tournament issue, means whenever you have a you want anyone candidate want to be the final winner, you can define some schedule in the tournament and keep that one as the final winner. And also, we have some harmonic ranking will vanish, depends on the topology of a clique complex. In particular, if a clique complex is loop-free, this one is a two-dimensional object, not a one-dimensional graph anymore. So if the two-dimensional object is loop-free, then we have harmonic ranking vanishes. We will see what this means. So basically, why we how topology enters here means because we have two considerations. One is the connectivity of the graph. Of course, if your graph is not connected, you never reach a unique global ranking. And the second one is more subtle. We want the graph. We wonder whether the graph is loop-free because harmonic ranking will be controlled by this loop structure in this clique complex. So Hodge decomposition theorem on simplicial complex, so in particular here is a clique complex, will exactly give rise to these two consideration, and its linear algebraic version is what I showed before. And here, let me see if I have enough time to Okay, we can just rapidly go through what's Hodge decomposition, Hodge theory, combinatorial Hodge theory on Kalil complex. So assume first we have a graph and we want to extend the graph to a simplicial complex. So here we have a vertex set and edge set. We regard this vertex set as zero simplices and the edge set as one dimensional simplices, and we can attach triangles. Here actually we collect all the three cliques, right? It's the largest possible triangles which exist in this graph. So we collect all those cliques as a two-dimensional simplex. In this way, we blow up this graph into a simplicial complex clique G. You can do the same way up to k-dimensional simplices, but we say for ranking purpose, it's enough to consider up to dimensional 2. So with this simplicial complex, actually, you can define some discrete differential forms or cochains in algebraic topology. That definition is exactly some alternating function defined on the vertex set, subset or the faces of this simplicial complex. So for given any set of vertex, if you do a permutation on this set, and then the sign structure will put alternating symmetry on this function. So in particular, if you look at one form on this graph on the edges of this simplicial complex, that is exactly skew symmetric matrix restricted on the graph edges. And also we can put inner product and matrix or matrix on this simplicial complex. And like this case we defined before, very useful for imbalance issue. And with function or K forms, we can define some operator or matrix between functions or K forms. So we call the co-boundary maps. Sometimes you can think that's a finite difference operator. It's an alternating difference operator. Take a function in CK, K forms, and map to K plus 1 forms, such that each time you just remove one element, and depending on the position of this element, you put a negative sign or plus sign and make a alternating sum. So this kind of operator we call the co-boundary operator, and actually plays the role of differentiation in continuous setting. The most important relation between those co-boundary maps will be this one. The composition of two in adjacent level will be equal to zero. So in particular, if delta zero from zero form to one form, that's exactly the finite difference operator on the graph node like this way. And the second operator, a one-dimensional co-boundary operator, we call it curl operator because up to a sign, it's a sum over a triangle, all the edges, all the flow like this way. So these two looks very familiar. And we can define the conjugate joint with the inner product defined. And so here are some meaning about the curl operator. If you have a curl-free condition like this case, means the flow is path independent. You can compare I to K directly. You can also compare I through J and J through K, get the same pairwise comparison result. Actually, this condition defines the triangular transitivity subspace we mentioned before. And also, divergence operator is the conjugate of gradient operator or delta the zero co-boundary operator. So that for each node, take the inflow and outflow sum on this node. And actually, for divergence, for flow, if divergence equals to zero, means this node is a preference neutral. So all the favored amount will be equals to the disfavored amount. And if a flow is divergence free, then that must be cyclic flow, induced cycles. So the the hardship, so far actually we define some complicated form, like zero form, one form, and two form, and we have operator from a chain map like this, and we can take another conjugate direction. So this actually, the composition of these two equal to zero actually says nothing but the global ranking are transitive or consistent, and the vice versa just take the conjugate, the gradient as the another direction. So, but this composition is very useful. For example, if we define the combinatorial Laplacian, high dimensional type combinatorial Laplacian, when k is larger than 1, actually we can always define this way. And so in particular, if k equal to 0, we just have one part available. That's the graph Laplacian, or vertex Laplacian. And k equals to 1, we have vector Laplacian, or Helmholtz Laplacian, means we define operator acting on the function defined on the edges. This operator have two parts, curl, curl, star, and dive gradient. The most important property associated with those combinatorial Laplacian is they are positive semi-definite, and their kernel exactly lies in the intersection of these third k and third k minus one conjugate. And this kernel we call harmonic forms. And actually this kernel equals to the Betti number, k-dimensional Betti number of this simplicial complex. So that's the connection with the topology. And the Hodge decomposition, in particular for one form, like this way, C1, it can be decomposed as the image of delta 0. Recall that this one is the gradient flow. So means in this subspace, you can always get some global score based on the for those candidate you are going to rank. And the second component H1 will lies in the kernel of one-dimensional combinatorial Laplacian. That's the harmonic flow satisfying the curl-free and the divergence-free. And the last one actually is the triangular curl, the lies another image. So previously, when we write in linear algebra terms, Y1 and Y2 and Y3 exactly lies in this three subspace. So here, that's why topology plays some role here. If we come back to the triangular transitivity subspace like this, the curl-free condition. So if a simplistically complex has a no loop-free, in other words, the first Betti number equals to zero, then triangular transitivity, this curl-free condition just means you have a score, global score on vertex whose difference give rise to the beta, this x. So that essentially means local consistency is enough to guarantee global consistency. If anyone familiar with finance, you might heard about arbitrage-free theory means a triangular arbitrage-free implies arbitrage-free. So that's a kind of version for this theorem. But we pay attention, we have to make sure the clique complex has loop-free condition. And the second condition is we say condensate profile in the beginning that maps to the pairwise data. Actually, if the clique complex has a first Betti number larger than zero, means the clique complex has some holes or some loops, then whenever you have non-vanishing condensate profile, you always lead to a non-vanishing harmonic flows. So harmonic flow have a lot of trouble, fixed tournament trouble, and if you come back to social choice, actually all sorts of paradox for pairwise rules will be created by condensate profile. So this is a very troubled term. So here, because you want to know the topology of your graph, so if we take some random graph models that's often used to model the internet, and but here we take a very simple random graph, Erdos Reni random graph for illustration. So for this random graph, actually we have very interesting phase transition phenomena. Everyone may know the first, the BKey zero, the number connect component, just undergoes one phase transition. Whenever you add more and more edge independently to the graph, then the graph will be connected. But there is a two-phase transition phenomena for BKey1. Means in the beginning, if you add too few graphs, of too few edge, then the graph never can formulate any loop. But when the edge is added more and more, you probably have loop happen. And but when all the all the edges added, you have a complete graph. Then this graph, all the triangle fill in, you will leave no loop in this graph. So the second phase transition happened on this random graph. So actually, some theorem can guide us for large random random graph. We do have this two-phase transition phenomenon. One is for BKey zero and two-phase transition for BKey k. Whenever k is larger than one, all the high-dimensional BKey number act in the similar way. But the only difference lies in where the phase transition happened. So in particular, come back to our problem. If you want to use random graph, or does any random graph to guarantee connectivity, you just need n log n samples when n is large. So that random sample with high probability, you have a connected graph. But if you want to keep a clique complex loop free, then you somehow need much more. It's n three half samples. Mean sample, by samples I mean the number of edges you need in this case. And of course you can have some random matrix theory to help you understand these phase transition phenomena, but we escape this one. And the last example very funny because Pablo is here. I just mentioned another application. I like this picture a lot. Actually, Pablo recently used Hodge composition to analyze finite games. Here, that's the prisoner's dilemma, very famous one. And assume your payoff matrix is like this case. So you can form a simplistic complex. It's a clique complex from this graph. How to form this graph? Actually, you put all the nodes as the strategy profile. So here is the first node, just represent corporate and A corporate and B corporate. Second node means A corporate and B defect and so on. You have all the strategy profiles as the node, and you add some edge. So if two strategy profile differs only in a single person strategy. So for example, between these two, only the second person, B, change their strategy. So these two will be called comparable. But these two diagonal, both the players, actually A and B, change their strategy. We call this one is not, this edge is not comparable. So and so on, you can build up a graph like this way, and then you fill in this graph like previous case, all the triangles, then you get a clique complex of this graph. So that's the very interesting point. And so how to assign the pairwise comparison? You can map, because every person has a utility function, you can map this utility function on the graph, map it as a project that one into a flow, edge flow on the strategy complex. Remember that every edge just means a single person changed the strategy. Then we can use the utility associated to that person, that particular player. Use that utility difference as the edge flow, as the pairwise comparison. In this way, we can assign a flow on the graph, and Nash equilibrium only depends on single players' utility difference. So on this flow game, we call this edge flows on the graph flow game. So Nash equilibrium will be preserved. Then the question is where the Hodge decomposition comes out if you have a flow game, actually, you're very funny. After removing a component, that component, as we say, the universal kernel before, it always leads to tie or zero in the flow in the pairwise comparison graph. Means that you can translate all the utility function into zero sum or zero mean one. And after this removal, all the flow game can be decomposed by potential and harmonic. You don't have curl because all the pairwise difference are given by the single utility function by a single person. So that's the, for harmonic game, if you look at two player game, that's essentially the zero sum game. And of course you can attach all the quadrangles because this game, although when you attach all the triangles, then you do not you have harmonic game, but the dimension depends on independent quadrangles. So if you attach all the quadrangles as two cells in the strategic complex, you create a cell complex, and this new complex will replace harmonic games to some local inconsistency term that's equivalent to Mondero-Shapley four-point condition. Means if for all the every quadrangle, if the quadrangular total sum, flow sum equal to zero, then this game must be potential game. So that's equivalent to this four-point condition. But for harmonic game, of course, you probably don't have an immediate observation about this. But I will not mention too much, and all the things seems my promise, I want to promise early dinner. So here, try to summarize. So all we have is a hard rank on graph. If you come back to some simple language, we just use a certain pairwise comparison, skew symmetric matrix summarized pairwise comparison data, and we have various statistic model to use in this setting. And we have such decomposition linear projection on the n minus one dimensional space give rise a global ranking, that's a least square algorithm. And the NP hard Kamini optimization will be replaced by this one, and you can compare the difference between these two. And also the other two projections characterize the nature of inconsistency in data and models. That's probably the part you really want to analyze and give rise a lot of conflicts and paradox in various social choice result. Here is another extension by Hochbaum. Basically it says you can extend this least square. Actually, she take a very different approach and a Markov random field approach and show a very general scheme under this cost loss function. For each square, you have a separate penalty, and the pairwise deviation, you have a F as the deviation penalty. And for this G is convex, F linear, you have very fast algorithm equivalent to the minimum graph cut problem. And the most general case for arbitrary G and F convex, you can also solve to find a minimum cut in a graph with such number of nodes and edges. But the last thing, so if F and G are arbitrary, then that's NP hard. That's the best known result for me in literature about this kind of pairwise complexity perspective. And okay. So what's the benefit for our method? Actually, we mentioned that this least square method is fast and scalable, but I don't think Google will listen to us, PageRank, the fine eigenvectors. We say least square is better, but I don't think they pay attention on this. But so for certain reasons, we can say this is the most consistent one. Because mostly agree with other social choice rules. And we have various extensions in machine learning, like those random graph model, online learning, active learning, and a personalized case. So here's some acknowledgement for my colleague and discussion and grant money. Okay, thank you.